As women over 40, we're told to get mammograms. But when was the last time somebody mentioned a bowel screening to you? Meanwhile, so many of us live with gut issues, with bloating, discomfort, irregularity, and we share those stories, we try new supplements, we search for the answers. But behind it all, I know there is that quiet fear that sometimes creeps in. Could this be, or could this become, something more? Today, we're joined by Associate Professor Dan Buchanan, a leading voice in bowel cancer research and in early detection. So from groundbreaking genetic studies to the latest prevention insights, Dan brings both science and heart to what I believe is a vital conversation, and sometimes one that makes us blush just a little bit. This episode is about moving from that silent worry to empowered action, because bowel cancer is often preventable when caught early. Today, we'll explore why rates are rising, especially in younger people, and what we should all be doing about it, particularly as women in perimenopause and menopause, to stay on top of things. Professor Dan, it's wonderful to have you with us.
Thanks, Shelley. Lovely to be with you.
Can you give me a brief of I guess, the state of bowel cancer in Australia?
So bowel cancer in Australia is one of the leading causes of cancer and one of the leading causes of cancer-related death. And unfortunately, if you look at Australia compared to the rest of the world, we actually have some of the highest rates across the globe. So that's really alarming as to why our country, and the lucky country that we have, why we're having such high rates of bowel cancer. So it's something that my research is really focused on, is understanding the causes of that.
When you first heard those statistics, and I'm sure you were a part of putting those statistics together, was that frightening to you or very surprising? As you say, compared to the lifestyle that we have here to other countries, we are the lucky country.
It was really surprising. I think most of us would think in Australia we have a good lifestyle. We have access to, healthy food, fruit and vegetables, and we have access, large environment that we can get out and exercise with, all the things that can help prevent cancer. So the fact that we saw those statistics were really alarming. The other part that was really concerning is what we can actually do about it, because our national screening program, although the age is just reduced to starting now or opting in at, from 45 years of age, the younger people under that don't really have anything that can protect them from bowel cancer.
My GP recently said, here you go, here's the link. You can now have the kit sent to you at home. It's not invasive. It's very, very simple and something that everyone should be doing over 45. Would you like to see that reduced to 35, 25?
I think that's one option we need to explore. The challenge with that will be the economics around expanding that screening program to more of the population, particularly younger people, because even though the rates are increasing, the absolute number of people that are under 45 that are getting bowel cancer is still low compared to the older population. So what we really need is research to understand what the causes are so that we can develop better methods and approaches to protect our younger population from getting bowel cancer.
Okay, well, what is bowel cancer?
Bowel cancer is, so it develops, the bowel is part of the large colon. So it's the part of your body that in essence is the last part of the digestive tract, where it allows your food waste to collate and absorbs water back into your body from that and compacts it. So it's a large part of the bowel that it has a lot of bacteria in there that help with that process as well. And unfortunately, there's a high turnover of cells that happen in the bowel, and I think that could be part of the reason that bowel cancer is a more prevalent cancer, because changes in our DNA can happen with each cell division and each turnover of cells that happen in there. So the likelihood that a change in your DNA can happen that leads to bowel cancer is more prevalent in the bowel than some other tissues in the body, for example, or organs.
Mm-hmm. So the first signs that something is not quite right, and from what I understand, a lot of bowel cancer is diagnosed too late, so we're not really reading those early signs, or perhaps we're not even getting those early signs. But we talk about blood in your stool, discomfort, change in your actual toilet habits, whatever it might be. So there's no real sort of clear lightning bolt or light globe moment as far as bowel cancer is concerned.
That's right. And so a lot of the symptoms you just described, there can be other causes for those types of symptoms. So they're very non-specific, and I think that's where the challenge has been in the past with people and patients themselves, ignoring those type of symptoms because thinking, oh, it could be something else. And even the GPs thinking, well, it's very unlikely to be bowel cancer because it's an older person's disease, you know, if you have bloating or if you have a bit of blood in your stool. So the recognition of those symptoms is really important in the population now, particularly in our younger population, recognising that persistence of those symptoms is something that needs to be investigated and considered, that, you know, bowel cancer could be a part of that spectrum of why you're getting those symptoms. So it's really important to have that conversation with your GP, particularly if those symptoms persist.
So really it would never be too early to hit the panic button as far as bowel cancer goes.
No, I think the most important thing is knowing yourself, knowing when something's abnormal, and going to your GP and having that discussion. And again, if something persists, really being an advocate for yourself and your symptoms and saying, no, there is something that's not quite right here, I need some investigation, or we need to discuss what the possibilities are here for these symptoms, so that, again, if it is bowel cancer, catching it early means you can survive it.
A quick pause for anyone interested in joining our DNA testing program in partnership with FitGenes, a world-leading genetics company. So many of you have already joined our FitGenes community. So now, for anyone who hasn't, it's your turn. Get to know your genes with us. When you know your genes and your unique genetic breaks, you can do something about it. For us here at the Aging Project, we've learned it's the best first step in our aging well journey. If you'd like to learn more, visit theagingproject.com and join the Fit Genes waitlist. We'll send you all the details so you can get started. You're saying it's the second leading cause of cancer death in Australia, which again is frightening to learn, the fact that if it is caught early, it is quite curable. I guess, yeah, the concern for me is that we're just not paying that attention, or what are we doing wrong in our lifestyle or in our diet that is, I guess, leading to those statistics?
I think the first thing is that you're absolutely right, that if we catch it early, 80 to 90% of people that have bowel cancer at an early stage, it's very survivable. So it's a survivable cancer if we get it early. And that's where the National Bowel Cancer Screening Program and the free kits that get mailed out, that's where they're so effective at being able to save lives by doing that test. Unfortunately, only about 40% of the people that have access or get a free kit mailed out actually complete that test. So that's really disappointing, because it is really designed to save your life. So that's the first thing. I think the other part is understanding why bowel cancer is happening. And it could be, there's a lot of talk around your diet. There's increasing obesity in the Australian population, which we think can be linked to the development of bowel cancer. But again, these are kind of non-specific things. There are lots of people that have high BMIs that don't get bowel cancer. So we need to understand what the development, how the development of bowel cancer is occurring in Australia, and what are the potentially the new risk factors or environmental agents that might be contributing to the development there.
Any ideas? How is this research going?
It's really challenging, and particularly for the younger population, because we think some of the exposures are happening early in life, so adolescence, childhood, or even prenatal. So it's really some of the work that we've done in epidemiology of bowel cancer in the past, and what we've been measuring may not be the right things to measure in our young population at the moment, because over time we realise there's been new risk factors that have entered our environment, and we're potentially not capturing those. So we likely don't have the right tools at the moment to understand what the causes are. So that's where we need a lot more research to try and unravel what is the cause behind this.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the research that we're doing is trying to overcome that problem by measuring an intermediary, which is the gut microbiome. So measuring the bacteria, the good and bad bacteria that's present in your bowel. So if changes in diet or an environmental exposure might upset that balance, by measuring the microbiome, we might be able to just to understand who might be at risk then of developing bowel cancer.
We often talk here about genetics, and it's something we're learning so much more about, and obviously that area is moving so quickly in science and in research. We know that genetics holds the gun and perhaps lifestyle pulls the trigger. Is bowel cancer at all a genetic condition?
Absolutely. It's so I started my research in the genetics of bowel cancer. That's where most of my research has been for the last 20 years. And we realised that particularly in the young population, about 20% of people under 50 that develop bowel cancer, there's a strong genetic component there. And we have good processes in place to be able to identify that. But the flip side of that is that 80% of the cases don't have a strong genetic component. So that's where our research has shifted a little bit from the genetics to understand, well, what are the environmental and potentially microbiome related factors that might be contributing to that. I guess the other part of that is not all of when we talk about high-risk genetics, so that might be one particular change in your DNA that you inherit that puts you at a higher risk for bowel cancer. Excuse me. But there are, you know, there's other parts of your genetic makeup that can increase your risk as well. So trying to understand that component in combination with the environment, as you mentioned, is a challenging part, but it's something that we're currently working on.
Okay, would you know, I guess, if you'd had a family history of bowel cancer, are you able to ask for a genetic test? Is it something that's sort of readily available through your GP?
It should be a red flag for your GP if you have a strong family history. So understanding your family history is really important, and having that discussion with your GP, because then they can refer you to the cancer genetics and genetic counselling specialist who will talk to you about your risk and decide with you whether you should have a genetic test or not.
Is it as thorough as, say, a colonoscopy? The genetic test obviously will tell you if you're predisposed to it, but is a colonoscopy really the only way as a surefire whether you have polyps that have been affected or not?
Yeah, currently colonoscopy is our gold standard protection method. So it's a it's a great procedure because it can do exactly what you say. It can remove the polyps, which are the pre-malignant lesions, the precursor lesions to bowel cancer. It can remove those and dramatically reduce your risk of developing bowel cancer.
So would it be a better test that everybody has once a year? I'm assuming that a bowel cancer test that is sent out by the government will test your stools, and there might be some cells in there or blood in there that they say, hey, you need to take this a little bit further. But if we just had a colonoscopy once a year or once every 2 years under a certain age, would that be the gold standard of healthcare that you'd like to see in Australia?
It would absolutely be the gold standard. The challenge is we don't have that capacity at the moment. The wait list for colonoscopy already quite long, and some of the higher category people aren't having surveillance in that recommended time frame.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be the gold standard, but we'd have to develop much more capacity in our people doing colonoscopy suites across the country to be able to enable that. So I think it's also, you know, it's a very good procedure, it's a very safe procedure. It's not without risk though. So again, I think there's opportunities for us to develop different tests to stratify people in the population or identify people who should be having more regular colonoscopy versus those that really don't need to have it, even though it could be offered to them.
Gut health is a topic that many of our guests, like Dr. Frank Lipman and Catherine Maslin, have mentioned in the past, which is why we have a range of products we've researched over at YouMustTryIt.com. We encourage you to be proactive about your gut health and let us help you resolve any ongoing issues. You can also book a health coaching appointment over at YouMustTryIt.com. Just go to health coaching to learn more. Right. When I was researching to chat to you today, I called my mate Zane Sheriff, who runs the MRI at Mermaid Beach Radiology. I said, Zane, I'm chatting to Dan. I've had an MRI lately. Would you pick up bowel cancer or some sort of bowel irregularity in the MRI? He said, yes, we would, but then we would send you straight for a colonoscopy anyway. So he would love to see, and obviously a great supporter of yours, to see that become something that is readily available. And it seems like it's always just, I guess, finance and accessibility that stands in the way of everything. How hard could you push your GP if you didn't have any genetic dispositions, but you knew that you something wasn't quite right or you weren't feeling very good? Are the most GPs quite open to sending you for a colonoscopy?
I think so, and that's where a lot of awareness has been raised, particularly with the GPs and, you know, Bowel Cancer Australia, which is a leading advocacy group in Australia. They've done an amazing job to educate GPs. They've developed these modules to help educate GPs on understanding bowel cancer and early onset bowel cancer, the signs and symptoms and the processes. So that's been great to help the GPs understand, you know, what they should be doing, not ignoring particular symptoms. So it's definitely something that you can talk to your GP about. You can go and access that and pay for a procedure if you can get yourself into a have a colonoscopy done privately. So it's doable. Again, it's we know in understanding what we call the risk spectrum for bowel cancer in Australia, there are people in the population and the majority of the population that are at very low risk of getting bowel cancer. Mm-hmm. So those people would not necessarily have to worry about having a colonoscopy even at all during their lifetime. You know, they could quite happily go through just following up with the National Bowel Cancer Screening Program. The challenge for us is identifying those people. And that may be through genetic testing or some other means to help understand who's in that group of the population, that large proportion of the population that just have such a very low risk of colorectal cancer versus identifying a smaller group but the important group that are at a higher risk.
Well, let's talk about the genetics of that, and I'm assuming there is a handful of genes that would be red flags. Can you name some of those and I guess break down what they are and when they're likely to sort of show their head as a genetic issue? Is there an age group where your genes are going to start to flare up in regards to bowel cancer, or is it something that you still wait until you're 50 before your genes are going to be affected?
No, it's a good question. The main cause of hereditary bowel cancer is Lynch syndrome, and that's the most common hereditary cancer syndrome. So we actually do a really good job in Australia now at trying to identify people with Lynch syndrome. There's lots of good processes in place for that. Typically, people with Lynch syndrome, they have a higher risk of bowel cancer, but also developing endometrial cancer as well and some other cancers. And so obviously understanding that if you have Lynch syndrome is really important, not only for because you can prevent bowel cancer, but there's other things you can do to help understand and mitigate your risks of other cancers as well.
Is there outward signs, of Lynch syndrome?
Not always. Most of Lynch syndrome's identified from someone that has developed cancer, bowel cancer or endometrial cancer, and there's telltale signs within the tumours themselves that we look at, and that gives us an indication, well, this person should be tested for Lynch syndrome. And then if we identify the DNA change that's happened related to Lynch syndrome, then that gives us an opportunity to go and measure that change in the rest of the family and understand who also has inherited that change. And the best part about that is we can do that before they've developed cancer. Mm-hmm. So that's where we can really do great work in cancer prevention by identifying hereditary cancer syndromes. So Lynch syndrome is the main one. Normally it manifests for colorectal cancer in the 30s to 40s. Mm-hmm. So Again, another good reason, because you're before that bowel cancer screening program age, to understand your genetic risk. If you have a strong family history, which is typically what happens with people with Lynch syndrome, that could be an indicator that you should have some genetic testing. There are other hereditary syndromes as well, familial adenomatous polyposis, or FAP, which is caused by DNA changes in the APC gene. And this, they typically account for about 1% of all the people that have colorectal cancer. So we're starting to talk about really rare syndromes, but that's offset by the fact that if you have a change in the APC gene, your risk of developing colorectal cancer is extremely high. So it really needs to be managed really well. And there are other genes as well. Currently, there's probably around 20 genes that your clinician, your genetic counselor might test for if they suspect you have a hereditary cancer syndrome.
You're working on what's called the ANGELS study, which is applying novel genomic approaches to early onset and long-standing polyposis syndromes. Oh, ANGELS, great acronym, love it. So what is this actually doing, and where is the research going in regards to this ANGELS study?
Yeah, the value of an acronym. We started the ANGELS study back in 2018 because we realized, and even before then, we could see the signs in the statistics that early onset bowel cancer was increasing in Australia. And we really didn't have the right studies in place to be able to understand what the causes are there. So we started that in 2018, and we've been working with the family cancer clinics around Australia and even New Zealand to recruit people to the study after they've had genetic testing, because we're after the people, we want to investigate the people that don't have a identified cause for their early onset bowel cancer. So that's where we're recruiting those people, we're collecting the tumours that have developed in them, we're measuring what the DNA changes are in those tumours and trying to get an understanding of what has happened prior to that that has led to their tumour. So that's a lot of the current work that we're doing now. We're finding some really exciting things in the non-genetic space that we think we, at least for one of these particular causes, we can relate back to a particular type of bacteria. Mm-hmm. So that's a really exciting aspect of work that is really novel in the field. So that's where we set up our ANGELS studies, really around how do we identify the causes of early onset bowel cancer.
Do you think Australia is at such high risk because we're an incredibly multicultural society? Do you think that might have anything to do with the fact here? There's a lot of, I don't even know how to say this politically, cross-pollination, I guess.
It's a good question. I think what we're understanding is that there's environmental exposures that have happened or that we're exposed to in Australia that is just can affect everyone. So I think that's why we're seeing higher rates. It's not targeting one particular group or ethnic or racial group of people. It's just exposures in our environment. It might have something to do with the food that we're eating that's available to us, or something to do with our lifestyle in terms of, you know, we're much more sedentary in our home and work lifestyle as well. So the challenge for us is to identify what that is so that we can design better prevention and detection and even screening programs that would help everybody in Australia, really, because we think everybody is at risk as well.
If we were just trying to do better, Dan, and look after ourselves better, obviously fibre is something that's mentioned a lot in relation to having a healthy bowel. What would you recommend as an associate professor who is dedicated to finding, I guess, solutions? What would you hope that all Australians are doing to give themselves half a chance?
It's a really great question. It's an important question. All we can go by is evidence that we know fiber is a having high fiber diet is protective for bowel cancer. Mm-hmm. Anything more specific than that is really difficult to pinpoint. So the best things we can do is eat healthy, have a high fiber diet, minimize the amount of red and processed meat, and lots of physical activity. And they're the safeguards that we can recommend at the moment. And me personally, that's what I do, because that's, you know, someone that knows the area, that's the sort of things that I do, because that's as best evidence that we have to warrant advice, I guess. It's challenging, yeah. We and that's why we've started Angels, that's why we do the research. We just don't have the detailed answers that we really need to help people at the moment.
It seems like it's a little bit of a silent killer, really, you know, to hear that it is the second leading cancer cause of death here in Australia. I'm sure will shock a lot of people listening today, because it's not something that is front of mind or talked about a lot. So the fact that you're able to join us today and bring awareness is wonderful. Thank you very, very much. I think a lot of people will be heading to their GP just to ask some more questions, perhaps be a lot more proactive in this area. You know, we try to take care of ourselves in so many areas. But again, you know, our toilet habits are something that we can I guess take more note of and be more aware of and be a little bit more considered about, rather than being embarrassed about.
Absolutely. And one of the phrases that I like, that one of the people that developed bowel cancer that has lived experience that works with us, it's not taboo to talk about your poo. So we have to, you know, be okay with having that conversation. We have to normalize that, that it's okay to talk about that. So it's okay to feel the symptoms and, you know, to understand the signs and symptoms of it, to talk about it with your friends and your GP, so that it is normalised, it is recognised, so that people are raising awareness, and that you're going to get the right medical advice and attention.
Being more related to perhaps genetic conditions or being able to get that genetic testing, is there sort of a governing body or a registry that keeps all of this information?
Yeah, I've been very lucky to be part of what we call the International Colon Cancer Family Registry. And it's a consortium that's been funded from the NIH since 1997. It is a really unique resource in that it's a family-based study of people and families with colorectal or bowel cancer, and it's a one of a kind in the world. And the fact that it's been going so long, we've been able to identify families and people with bowel cancer and follow them over this long period of time, 25 years, to understand what's happened to them, understand their journey, understand if they've developed another cancer or another bowel cancer. So it's been a really important resource to move the field of colorectal cancer forward, and it's led to over 500 publications in the field of colorectal cancer, understanding lifestyle, risk factors, genetic risk factors, a lot of work in the Lynch syndrome space and understanding what are the drivers of developing colorectal cancer and other cancers in people with Lynch syndrome. So it's been an amazing resource that it's been a privilege to be part of and help build that resource.
Such an issue here in Australia, Dan. It seems like you and your team really are at the global forefront of bowel cancer research. Why? Why is Australia so good at scientific research? Who are you working with, and why has this become such a leading domain for us?
We do have some great researchers in Australia, and I always think that we punch above our weight compared to the US and Europe. I'm very fortunate to be part of a great team of researchers at the University of Melbourne, also within the Collaborative Centre for Genomic Cancer Medicine. It's a wonderful environment and at the forefront of innovation and technology to understand cancer development, prevention and treatment. So it's a great environment. The people that work there are world leaders themselves, so it's really a great place and a really key place in Australia for bowel cancer research. I think the other thing that's been really important in the last couple of months is the global recognition that early onset bowel cancer has become a global problem that we need to work together on to solve this problem. And our advocacy groups, the Fight Colorectal Cancer Group in the US, Bowel Cancer UK and Bowel Cancer Australia, have come together. They've funded the world-leading experts in early onset bowel cancer to come together. We just met in Barcelona, Spain, to talk about what we're going to do in the next couple of years to really tackle what are the causes of the increasing incidence in early onset bowel cancer that we're seeing not only in Australia but across many countries in the world. So that's been a really exciting initiative that I've been privileged to be part of. And so hopefully that in the next couple of years will actually make some really important inroads into understanding the causes.
If any of our community listening today perhaps has had their genetic testing done, knows that they are predisposed to the potential of developing bowel cancer, would you like any of them to reach out to you? Is there anything we can do to help you in your research?
Happy to be contacted. I think in terms of information, the teams that look after them, if you have a known hereditary syndrome, are very, again, world-leading teams in terms of the care and the knowledge they provide to patients and their families. In terms of research, if you have questions or need more information, Bowel Cancer Australia website and Cancer Australia website are also great sites to find out more information about bowel cancer, your risks, treatment options and things like that. But again, yes, happy to be contacted by people if they're interested in some of the research that we're doing in the genetics and microbiome of bowel cancer. You would have to go to GP, who would then refer you to a family cancer clinic, and they would assess your risk or your likelihood that you would have a hereditary syndrome. If they think based on your risk that you wouldn't, and you wouldn't, they couldn't offer you government-funded testing, you then have the option to go and pay privately for a genetic test as well. So members of the public could just go and give a blood sample and have a genetic test done for themselves. But referral would come from a GP, or if they have a gastroenterologist that's managing them already, they could be referred then to the family cancer clinic for testing. That's how you would access typically that publicly funded genetic testing.
That is absolutely the headline and the title of our podcast today. Thank you so much, Dan, for chatting with us.
Thanks, Shelley. It's been a pleasure.
As always, the Aging Project podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes. Always seek medical advice from a qualified practitioner.